My name is Patsy Bezenz. I'm a member of the Australian Garden History Society and I'm conducting an oral history with John Visker, the current chair of the WA branch of Australian Garden History Society in his home in North Perth. Today is Thursday, the 11th of October, 2018. The interview will mainly be focused on the formation of the WA branch, but we'll include some background on John's life. Can we commence by you presenting your full name, the year and your place of birth?
Okay. My name, John Visker. I was born on the 26th of November 1948 at Subiaco Hospital.
And the names of your parents?
My mother, Athena Visker, but her maiden name was Athena Panos, which was not her correct birth name. Her maiden name was officially Athena Pitsikas.
And your father?
And my father migrated to Western Australia at the age of 16. His birth name was Stavros Visker, but he was known as Steve Visker.
Right. So both of them are from overseas. Was your mother born here?
My mother was actually born here because her Greek migrant parents arrived, her father in 1899 in Albany, and then moved up to the goldfields almost within 12 months. Mm. And her mother arrived about 1905. Her mother's maiden name was Michaelides. My mother's mother arrived in 1905. So my mother was born in 1921 at 99 Lake Street, Perth. Mm. So she was actually an Australian citizen of Greek heritage. So as a consequence, my mother did not have an accent because she was born in Lake Street and went to Highgate Primary School.
So what was your father's occupation?
My father, when he arrived at 16, was apprenticed to become a tailor. And he was apprenticed to a man called Keith Stronach, who was a tailor. And after he had finished his apprenticeship, then worked for a man, Torrey, in Lake Street. And that was his first job. And then once he sort of finished his, if you like, indenture extended that, he set himself up in the business by about 1938-39 as a tailor in Central Arcade, Perth.
Oh, that's interesting. There were many tailors in there, in town.
It was the period where people bought a suit, had a suit made. There was no off-the-rack. It was what we call today bespoke.
Bespoke.
Yeah, yeah. Which in those days, everyone had a tailored suit, at least one good suit.
Mm. So you said that your mother was from in Lake Street and your father was working with somebody in Lake Street. Is that where they were living?
So my mother living at 99 Lake Street and my father working at Mr. Torrey the tailor in Lake Street up towards Rowe Street there. My mother, where she and her older sister, when they walked into town and walked past, saw my father working because they were just, you know, the windows there. And so it was like, well, he's nice looking. Yeah. And so, you know, looking for a partner. So that was the beginning of a relationship that they ended up getting married in 1945. And all because of him, there he was working in the tailor shop and he would have been about 18, 19 at that stage.
So he wasn't born in 21, your mum was older?
So dad was born in 1920 in Albania, in a place called Korça, which was just a little regional town east of Tirana, which is the capital. Probably halfway between, probably closer to the Greek part of the Balkan Peninsula.
All right, so where did you live as a child?
We lived in Oxford Street on the corner of Harrogate and Oxford Street, Leederville, which is now called Oxford Close because of the freeway and other parts. It's now become isolated. Mm. And we lived in a weatherboard house that was owned by my Albanian grandfather, who was a greengrocer. So we lived next door to my grandparents, and I was 4 going on 5 when my parents shifted to the established suburb of Floreat Park, and it was 1953.
So where did you go to school?
So as a consequence, in that year, when I was 5, turning 6, I was enrolled at Floreat Park Primary School, which, like most, was the post-war baby boom, and it was so big that the number of children that had turned up that year, we were in a commandeered staff room as a classroom because there were so many children.
Yes, and there wouldn't be that many schools between sort of like Perth and Floreat. There's Westleigh, you know, there's...
That's right. Yeah. So the only other school was Jolimont, and Wembley. And I, having a late birthday, 26th of November, remained 5 for virtually the whole of my first year at primary school.
Okay, so schooling and then high school?
1960 was my last year at Floreat Park Primary School, grade 7. And after that, we all went off to high school. So there was modern school and or a private school. So modern school was where most of the people that I went with, modern school was where they went to. Now, we had a choice of private schools, and in 1961, when that was my first year of high school, Hale School had opened at Wembley Downs. They had shifted from West Perth, and that building, I think, was built about 1925, and they were there. And then in 1960, they closed, and because of the endowment lands that they had out at Wembley Downs, they built a brand new school, which meant that people from Floreat Park had the opportunity to send their sons to a private boys' school. And they did take the opportunity. And not only that, but people from Scarborough, people that normally would not have sent their children into West Perth. My older brother had gone to Hale School in West Perth because other people that he was with also had been enrolled there. So I was the second son, by the way, so therefore it was like, well, we've sent the first, so you have the same opportunity. And see, in that period, 1960, I think economically it was quite a stable time. My father, being a tailor, had enough work to be able to send 2 boys to a private school.
So you went to Hale School, you didn't go to Mod?
So I ended up going to Hale School, yes, okay. Sorry, I don't really mention that. Mm-hmm. And so Hale School, the traditional school that was started in 1858, was then started out there. So this private boys' school, where everyone else went to modern school as the closest school. Otherwise, they would have gone to Guildford Grammar, Wesley, and the other private boys' school. But Hale School was literally in the next suburb from Floreat.
I, in the introduction, referred to you as the present chairman of the Garden History Society. Your employment, I know, was leading into and became... you know, influential as to why you became part of the Garden History. So can you just outline when you left high school, what your ambitions and where you ended up?
So 1965 was what was called the leaving year, and you had to get English plus 5 other subjects to get what was called the leaving certificate. So English was compulsory. I failed leaving English, but got, I think, 5 other subjects. So technically I had not completed the leaving certificate. So you had 2 options. One was just to take employment or to re-enroll at the school and complete your leaving year again. So that was an expensive exercise. So I had made inquiries at the end of 1965 with the City of Perth, because I was interested in plants, in horticulture. I made inquiries, did they have any horticultural courses? and they had just implemented a horticultural training scheme, probably to replace the old apprenticeship where you basically worked in Hyde Park at the council nurseries as an apprentice, and then eventually you then became leading hand a decade later on. So they had implemented a program where, in conjunction with the technical and further education system, King's Park and City of Perth, they had implemented a new horticultural training scheme. I was taken on by City of Perth in 1966, I think started January, as one of the three people that was on this new apprenticeship, or they call it a training program. We worked at the City of Perth nurseries, and then twice a week we went what we call night school. One was to King's Park, a little shed at the back of King's Park, and then on Thursdays I think we went to Mount Lawley TAFE to do, in effect, what was science, which was like a modified botany course. I think it was probably around about May, because there was this period where you just did it and then you would officially sign the indenture papers, I think they were called, which then meant you, for the next 3 years, you would be working as an apprentice. And I was not particularly inspired. The course was not organised. It was not well thought out. And I had not got my leaving certificate. So I thought it didn't turn out to be what I wanted to do. I had actually found that in that year of Hale School, the leaving class of 65, I think at least six, possibly seven other people had also failed. That was the quality of teaching at a private boys' school. They had all gone to Leadville TAFE to complete or to upgrade. And when I heard about it, because I used to meet up with them, I thought, well, wait a minute, maybe I should do that. So as a consequence, I enrolled around about May into Leadville TAFE. The education department had changed the whole system. It became a cumulative thing. So you could then add on the subjects that you had not passed, rather than redoing the whole lot. I re-enrolled and did English, and I thought, well, okay, I will be there, and I redid some of the other subjects. I then applied to go to teacher training, and of course I needed to have the English, so I did that, and as a consequence, at the end of 1966, I passed the English subject, added it to, and then I was accepted into Teachers Training College in 1967.
And that was over at Claremont, the teacher training.
Well, we all mustered in January 1967 at Claremont campus. We all lined up alphabetical order, and they said, there are two colleges and there's also the possibility of a secondary college being formed. Who would like to stay here at Claremont? Who would like to go to Greylands? And who was interested in going on to secondary teaching? So three quarters of the group went to the side which was Greylands Teachers College, and a quarter went to Claremont. And so these lecturers said, no, wait a minute. You know, if you want to do secondary, you have to go to Claremont. So they then sort of pulled back about, so they're about equal. So I went to Greylands Teachers College because I had someone who'd been at Hale School the year before was already there, so someone I knew, and I just heard that people at Greylands had a good time. It had spirit.
Many reasons. graduating.
So I did 2 years. It was the old two-year teacher training certificate, and then we were out. And so this year, 2018, celebrates 50 years of me graduating from Greylands Teachers College. So in 1969, my first teaching appointment was for 3 weeks at a very small school at the back of Lake Munger called Windara Primary School. Wondara. And then I was then transferred to Esperance.
But this was general studies? This was not specific to do with...
This was just primary school.
Right, so just let me go back, yep. That you'd started the apprenticeship or the traineeship to do with plants because you were really interested in that. So was there anything you know, were the science subjects something of your interest when you were doing teacher training?
There wasn't really any options at all. There wasn't any specialisation, but I did do the nature study option. Not electives, but you had to do what were called grounds to help beautify Greylands grounds, which was just saying that had been instituted since the college started in the 1950s. And so we had a little nursery there to propagate plants. So I did that thing. So, you know, we used to propagate plants and help out in gardening activities. I did the natural history, the science ones, which was a bit of plant collection and insects and things. So I was still in that field of that interest.
Where did the love of plants or the interest in that side come from? Because in the face of the new education that you're getting through teacher training, you know, sometimes you'd think that that would drown out any interest that you might have, but clearly no.
Okay, well, there's two things. One was at primary school, and I can remember all the little things that we did, a component, growing wheat on wet cotton wool, cutting, slicing, bringing carrots and growing them on cotton wool. So there was a component already in what in effect was probably the science part of primary school curriculum. I enjoyed that, and you know, I would do it at home. So I would at home start those things. I like that observational point from that growing things. Also, we had shifted into a brand new house in Floriot Park in 1953. There was no garden at all. The roses were selected by a friend of my father. My father was not a gardener, but like everyone else, you just started a garden, which was lawn, some garden beds, some rose bushes, and the backyard, half of it for vegetables, and everyone did that. That was the landscaping style. And then, by the way, there was virtually no landscape architects as we know today. So a good friend of my father's belonged to the West Australian Rose Society, and he selected what he thought would be good roses for our garden. So our front garden, three sides, the front and the top and like that, all had rose beds. And I can still remember all the soil being dug out, the sand, sorry. So that would have been 1954. And all the organic matter and everything thrown in. And then a truck arriving filled with beautiful chocolate loam from the hills. Absolutely superb. And that was layered and that was filled in to what had been excavated to about a metre. And then the rose bushes came in the winter period. Mm-hmm. And they were bare rooted and they would have come from, I'm not too sure, but possibly either Newman's or one of those commercial rose nurseries. And they were planted, and I can remember them being tamped in and watered in. So this person helped my father do it, spaced out. And they were there until the house was sold in 2006, those initial rose bushes.
Is the house still in existence?
Still stands, but I do believe that all the roses have been pulled out because they're not fashionable anymore because they were coloured. In those days, you had a variety, you know, a dozen, and they probably throw in a 13-month. And the nurseryman sometimes selected, because this our friend belonged to the Rose Society, they would have been the ones really recommended that did well in the Perth conditions. Mm-hmm. And as we know, at least 3/4 survived. So I observed, and I watched, and I remembered my father getting little seedling poppies that you bought in little flat trays from either the hardware store normally, because they would get it from some of the wholesale nurseries. And I remember the poppies being planted just along the edge there.
Sweet peas?
We didn't ever grow sweet peas, but I remember the poppies because of their wonderful, interesting flower and the smell of it as well. And they were just put as edges along the edge of the rose garden. Mm. So you had rose bushes and just a little edging of annuals, and the rest was kept weed-free.
Did you live at home when you were at teacher training?
Yes, I did. But I just have to go back one step. My Greek grandfather and Albanian grandfather both grew vegetables.
Yeah.
Their garden was devoted solely to productive gardening. And they could not understand, my Albanian grandfather while I was growing ornamentals. Even at a birthday party, you had to invite your grand. He would take me into the garden and show me how to plant corn. And I thought, I want to enjoy my birthday party. And here he says, oh, come down here. So this was this whole subsistence like that. I suppose they both had experience growing plants in Albania and Greece. So this was this thing. Now, did that come through me? I've got two brothers and neither interested in growing. So I was growing things from a young age, and succulents were my first plant, easy to grow. A baked bean tin, okay. Terracotta pots were expensive. We didn't have any. My parents weren't real gardeners. And here I was just starting to, and when I went off to the Fates for a penny, I could buy a little cheap cactus succulent. So that was my beginnings of me spontaneously wanting to grow my things themselves.
So it's in there.
It's there.
Yeah.
And grade six, wrote off to Yates. We did projects and they sent me a packet of broad bean seeds and a whole booklet of growing things, and I've still got that as a scrapbook. So here it was. And I remember growing stocks. I must have either got a packet of seeds and I just sprinkled them. They all grew, and because of the root competition, half just died out. But that was just something that I wanted to do. No one said, this is how you do it. I just put two and two together. So it was always there. So wherever I was, I'd be growing plants.
What's the transition between teaching primary school and moving to the more serious, or the horticulture okay. side?
And by the way, we never had a school essentially a school garden at Floreat Park. A couple of boys were doing something one day, and I said, what are you doing? So we're going to make a little garden. And they just were digging over the soil. And I said, oh, can I join you? Yeah. And so I can remember we had geraniums with red flowers, which would have come from bits from home, from people's homes, and big sunflowers. But there was no organised school garden at Floreat Park. But I enjoyed that, so I just joined in either ad hoc manner. So at Hale School, because I was streamed into sciences, so I had to do physics and chemistry, which I didn't aspire to, didn't enjoy. So a unit that had a bit of botany and plant-based, I wasn't allowed to do because the streaming test said, should be doing this. So for the whole of high school, I was not involved in any way, but I did all the gardening at home. Kept growing things at home all the time. I saved up every week a money from lunch money, and I ended up buying, at the end of each month, Your Garden magazine. It was 2 shillings. It took me a whole month of just the odd penny, and that was my first gardening manual. And I've still got those. And that information, which has not changed, the layout has. So that was really my first reading about. And I was not a reader of fictional things. I liked the science part of it. And so I read it from cover to cover, all the ads, how to grow begonias, how to grow this. So I was introduced to a whole range of ornamental plants very early on, by the time I was in my teenage years. Couldn't afford to buy them. But every now and then I would see something and I might buy a coleus. But yes, and there was a lot of plant exchanges as well with people. And I got just in the neighbourhood, walking around, seeing it, and, oh, would you mind if I got one of those gerberas? You know, so that's how I did it. Yeah, so Teachers College, I was involved in that aspect of it. And with all my classes, we would do some type of basic things. But because I was teaching in the country, it was very hard.
You eventually ended up at TAFE.
I was involved with nature study, so still sciences, plant-basing, the botany part. I did that with my primary class, joined them up to nature, to Gould League. And one of my headmasters, Peter Mills at Greylands Primary School, was also interested in it. And my name must have been passed because I was invited to take part in the Gould League and become part of the Gould League Club. And then I was invited to go down at one of their nature study camps as an observer. And then eventually I got more involved with Gould League. And at one point I think became like the not the president, but there was like a junior group, we'll say junior. There were 80, 60, 70-year-old members of Gould League, but there was a working group. That's probably better. And so at end of 1979, I was informed that the Kings Park Education Centre seconded teacher was now going back into the classroom to seek advancement, and the position would had become open. And if I applied and listed all the ways I've been involved in plants, gardening, natural history, science, and I was given the position as the education officer in Kings Park, running the Kings Park Education Centre. And my appointment was from 1980 through to 1984. So initial secondment became 5 years. So I was not in a class anymore, and I was working with school groups, primary, mostly primary, some secondary, and also some teacher training to bring them in to do a bit of...
Did you do tours or things into nurseries?
So the part that I was involved with was not the Kings Park propagation side at all. They wouldn't allow me to do that. I had to work within the curriculum. So groups that came to Kings Park wanted to do an introduction, history, what were the main plants growing there. Teachers wanted to know a bit more in depth about it. High school teachers say, look, we've got a unit that does myrtle, you know, look at this.
So they're that's really your grounding, isn't it? Yeah. Going into the history of Western Australia.
So I was now running a one-man centre, running off all the sheets, designing all the activity sheets. I instigated the first for any botanic garden in Australia, a holiday activity programme in the botanic gardens. It wasn't just sit down and draw a picture. There was a junior, middle and upper school. All the activity sheets were designed for them observation. And we ran it very successfully in the botanic gardens. And each person who participated, they got a little sticker of a wildflower for every activity sheet they did. And so the little folder would have about half a dozen. And, you know, and I was able to employ some teachers. And it ran from Monday to Friday. I think the first week of the May holidays and the first week of the August, September holidays in that way. And it got kids in the botanic garden observing. And once again, I had to design activity sheets. I had to do that side of it, the admin side as well. And so I upgraded my teaching qualifications. I got my Bachelor of Education, and that was early 80s. And I thought, that's the end of my, I'm not doing a master's, I'm not doing that. I'm now just going to go off and do a formal course in horticulture, where at my own speed and just do it at night school. So I went to Bentley TAFE and enrolled, you know. So I was starting a certificate, what's in effect a trade certificate in horticulture. And I was with people who'd been working all day long in horticulture for councils, nurseries, parks, turf. And I was a person just like them and starting it. And I eventually finished it and then enrolled to do a diploma. And in 1984, my secondment came to an end, and which meant I had to go back to where I came from, a primary school, a grade 6 primary school. And I struggled, and I'd actually seen in the education circular advertised jobs for TAFE lecturers. I thought, oh, and every year there was vacancies. Unbeknown to me, that was just a formality. The jobs weren't there. So I applied for one, and I got back this thing that said, you know, thank you very much, but there are no vacancies this year. Well, at the very end of that year, the Commonwealth Government gave extra funding for trades areas to allow girls to go into a traditional male trades area. And horticulture was one that had been selected. And they were going to fund for a year an additional lecturer in horticulture to allow Bentley TAFE to take more girls into horticulture. And they got enough enrolments to justify an extra lecturer in horticulture. So that was an article in a paper. My cousin saw that and said, she'd heard that I'd applied for this and had failed. And she said, look, did you see this? So I made contact with the education department and said, look, I put an application in. It had been, there wasn't a vacancy, but I'd now see that way. And they said, well, look, when was it? We will just re-submit that for you to the TAFE section. And I went to an interview and got it. But they said, it's only a secondment. Now, you've already been on a secondment for so long, you have to go back to the class. The superintendent said, look, I'll rearrange that. So I ended up being seconded to lecture in horticulture at TAFE for 1 year only. And the 1 year finished. I was still doing my certificate in horticulture. So back to the classroom. So I did one more year of teaching at Coolbinia Primary School and then started my diploma in horticulture and actually took a year's study leave after that 1 year because I didn't want to be in primary anymore. And a proper vacancy was advertised and I applied for it and got it. So that was the beginning of 25 years in horticultural education. And I was one of the few certificated teachers. People were drawn from the trade and they had their things in horticulture and trade experience, but I was one of the very few people that actually had a Bachelor of Education and by that stage had done at least 15 years in teaching.
You mentioned the Gould League.
Yes.
Were there other societies that you were interested in to do with horticulture?
Well, I had noticed when I was working in King's Park, I'd picked up, in effect, the Garden History Society journal, which you could buy at newsagents. And so the former journal that was run by Tim and Kiva North, it was a bit of a business thing as well. So you could go to it. And I picked it up one day, and a lot of it was plant-based, but there were some articles to do with garden history. And in it was an application form.
And I thought, join the society.
Yeah, and I thought, oh, okay, I like this. So I sent away.
So when was this? This was...
I was still at King's Park, so it'd have to be pre-84. It could have been 83, 84.
Because the Garden History Society established itself in 1980.
80, yeah. And then I found out that Greg Keary, a botanist in King's Park, had actually joined also by subscription. And he happened to be working in King's Park. He was the King's Park staff side, not the education department staff.
But there was no branch.
No. So then I found out, I got a letter back from a lady called Olene Richards, who was a West Australian person who was like the regional coordinator, but not officially. I made contact with her. We started that. She was actually a landscape architect, fully trained, very interested in history. We met socially and I said, look, why don't we form a branch? She said, she was not an organiser. She didn't want to do that. She said, if you want to do it, you can organise some social functions. So I did. So she gave me the list of the West Australian people that belonged to the national branch.
So already they...
There was probably about 10 people. And so I said, well, I'll organise something. And I did do that. And our very first excursion was to Mary Hargrave's garden in Kalamunda, a couple of acre garden, just a nice garden. We sent out an invitation to it.
Sorry, is this in 1984?
No, it's after. It's post that. It's a little bit later. It'd have to be about 86, I think. And so we sent out, and people, about a dozen people, came along to see Mary's garden, and that was our first social. Olene appointed me as the social organizer. So there was still no official body. And I said to her, look, how do we form an actual branch, West Australian branch? She said, you just call a public meeting. And whoever comes along and then someone just stands up and says they would formally like to put forward to form a garden history a branch. So we called a public meeting, which was November the 15th, 1988. Now, just prior to that, John Sales, the garden advisor to the National Trust in England, he had been brought out to Australia because of our bicentenary and visited every state. So someone, could have been Dame Elizabeth Murdoch, had actually funded that, underwritten it, and he stayed at each state put up by someone. So he arrived in Western Australia as the first leg, and he was put up at Bishop's House because Lord McAlpine owned it at that stage. We hosted him. He came to this very room. I got all the people that I knew that belonged to it, and they came to visit. We had a couple of social functions in that way, and then he went off to the Eastern States, and then after that, I thought, well, it's time to actually form, and that's when I called a public meeting in conjunction with Olney, because she was still the correspondent, the person in...
So she was communicating with the national body.
Yeah, and she had representation. She was the West Australian representative on the national body, but I don't know whether she... They may have flown her there, or whether she did it by telephone link-up. We call this meeting, and based upon the strength of John Sales coming here...
And where was the meeting?
Because I was by that stage working at Bentley TAFE, I asked if we could use the lecture theatre. So in 1988, I was actually at Bentley TAFE, and that was no problem at all. We advertised it, and those people turned up, and we had quite a few apologies because Olene had sent out to all the people that were on the mailing list. So we had the apologies, and then we had the people who actually turned up and signed.
Well, I can see just in the apologies, you've got John and Ray Oldham.
Yes.
And Margaret Feelman.
Yeah.
You're very major individuals within the heritage industry.
Right.
So it must have galvanised people's interest in either in gardens and in heritage.
See, when John Sales was here, he gave a slide talk at the Alexander Library. I think quite a few people came to that in different fields, like the parks and recreation. We advertised that the same way like that. So that was also, and he talked about the gardens of the National Trust and a bit of restoration. So, you know, based upon all of that, there was some interest. So these people, we communicated with them afterwards. Now, Bentley TAFE was not the easiest place to find the lecture theatre at all, even though I did my best. Some people turned up after the meeting. It took them an hour to find the right room. Anyway, no minutes were taken at that meeting, by the way. And it was just an informal meeting that someone just got up and proposed, and that's what we did. I was elected the chairman. Then a friend of mine, Anne Willocks, who couldn't come to the meeting, but she said, look, I'm happy to help in a bit of secretarial things. So she got nominated as secretary. And then we formed a small committee. And that was the beginning in 1988 of the Garden History Society as a formal branch of the Garden History Society. And we decided to call it the West Australian branch rather than the West. Yeah, we just said we'd go for West Australian as opposed to Western Australian. And that's how we decided on the name. The very first committee meeting was then held in the following year in this room here. And then we planned our program. And that was the beginning. So virtually 30 years ago in this very room, the Garden History Society's first committee meeting was held. And we've survived.
Have you been the chairman since that?
I was elected the first chairman. And then after... whatever period it was, then I decided to step down because I think you could go 3 years, which was 6 years. And then by special application, I think they would extend another 3 years. So I said, no, 6 years. So I stood down and Tessa Watson, who was on the committee, then took the reins for 1 year. And by that stage, we were asked if we would... have our very first,
National Conference.
National Conference. That was 1998. So the writing was on the wall. So I stepped back into the breach again otherwise. So I became it in time to organise the first conference. Then I was that for a while. And then I said there was time to step down. And then Caroline Grant, who was a committee member, then... took on the role as the chairperson. And then in about 2012, she decided to step down just in time for the next conference. There was a conference in between us, by the way. I was a chair then. And that, where was it? Yes. Anyway, so I've been three times. So we had Tessa Watson as a chair for a very short period of time, Caroline Grant, and then she stepped down after a good period, and then I picked it up once again just in time for the third conference.
Yes. Okay, so can you explain what the fundamentals of forming, why was it formed? Why have a society?
Well, the journal was out. You could still buy the journal on the newsstand in the initial time like that. There were people who were interested in history. So some were gardeners, horticulturists, but other people were just interested in the historical side of it. So we found that people were interested in that. And when we sent out what's your interest, a lot of people were interested in the history, the historical side of it. You know, how, what are you interested in, what subjects? And I just like that historical side. But also, as well as visiting gardens as well. And gardens with a bit of age on it. Now, running side by side was the Open Garden Scheme. Probably just after we had formed. So there was that avenue of just going to visit gardens for the sake of visiting gardens. But there was a group of people that were interested in the history, the historical aspect of it as well.
The advocacy for conservation of historic gardens is very prominent in underlying the current AGHS. Yeah. So was there discussions about that at the
time? Well, in 1979, Olin Richards, as part of, I think, a whole national thing, went on a tour. And remember, 1979 was when we celebrated our sesquicentenary. And also there was, with the national government as well, there was a lot of interest in heritage as well. And so she travelled through the state, calling little public meetings, seeing what gardens of a historical basis still existed. And so little public meetings in different regional places. And she talked to appropriate people and built up a whole list of properties that had historical values, but also had the gardens or the remnants of the gardens. So
large rural properties as well as domestic town.
So she wrote up a document which still exists. The National Trust has a copy of it. And this was the Garden Study, 1979. It's in a landscape format. So it enumerated the gardens, so Albany and the bigger regional places, and then the names, and if they needed work, if they still existed, if they needed documenting. So that was the first stage, a huge project. And the funding at that stage was National Trust as well as the Commonwealth Government. I think she started it, but it fizzled out because of one thing and another. The effort that had to go into it was huge. Visiting every one of those, documenting, photographs. So the initial document came out of it, what existed and what work needed to be done. What state was it in? Could it be revived?
So did you use that documentation in event planning?
Yes. Yeah. And so one of our early ones, I looked at the ones that were in Pepmont Grove and I organised a gardening tour that we went around and looked at those that she had identified as still with original elements. Osborne Hotel had just been sold and the garden had just disappeared. So the buildings had been, most of them had been razed to the ground, I think. Anyway, so it was the tail end of the death knell of some of those. Eunella, which featured in our thing, was totally in its mature state. Still with the tennis court there, still with other features there. Now, of course, subdivided, all the mature elements chainsawed to the ground. So that next phase, what was proposed, which needs money to do and a qualified person, never really took off. We tried to get the university interested. Landscape architecture had just started.
So that is the advocacy idea. So you as the chairman would approach?
Yeah. For students to take these on as projects. We've never, ever had any help from them at all. They've only been interested because of the people running it in, the bigger names. The person who designed Canberra. I've forgotten his name now.
Burley Griffin.
Yeah, Burley Griffin. So the head of the department was only interested in the effect that Burley Griffin had in Western Australia in garden planning. So never ever, even though over the years I tried, Caroline tried, all the time. Never, ever once had a telephone call from a student saying, look, I've got a research project. Could you recommend a garden that means documenting? You know,
it just sounds like we've got to get into that, John.
So there was
events. There were certainly
conservation. We organised events, and the events were garden visits. We organised weekends away. We went to Bridgetown. We're weekend in Busselton, Bunbury. We went up to 2J. We had day trips to York. All seeing those things. And people enjoy a huge amount of effort because a recce, first of all, a description of those and even some of the plants to look at, you know, so myself and the committee, which was good, but you can only sustain that for so long. And as I said, the open garden scheme then started as well. So that was really started to be a bit of competition. So people just wanted to go and see a garden for the sake of seeing a garden would just turn up at open garden. So you started to see other elements coming in and drawing away from us membership. And so people would join us for a year and then think, oh, you know, I'd rather just go and have a look at gardens and didn't want to be involved so much. And that's probably with the whole of our memberships nationally now competes with so many of those other things that draw away from the Mediterranean garden to the cottage garden clubs.
Georgie's roses.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and you mentioned three conferences.
Three national conferences, 1998, 2005 and 2014. On a 7-year cycle, I think, 7 or 8 year cycle.
So we're halfway into the cycle. It's coming, John. It's coming.
I'll be too old by then.
No, you won't. That's huge workload, isn't it? But in my experience, the journal was the reason for getting involved with the organisation.
That's how the advertising. That's how I got to know about it.
And the reading, the wonderful articles. They're so varied, and the conferences were the ones that I've been to. Very, very stimulating. So I really support the strength of the society.
Well, it's only been through having a small dedicated committee that eventually they become worn out, burnt out, you know. And
that's why you only have 6 years.
That's right. I'm coming to the end of my cycle now. And, you know, when you think, we've had now two major exhibitions, Historic Gardens of Perth and the Western Suburbs. We've had three conferences. Caroline organised a tree forum. We tried to organise a few little workshops, but the numbers weren't there, so we cancelled. We were going to have one in Araloon, Restoring Your Gardens. We had another little workshop called Restoring Gardens. It all takes time and effort, and people move on, and people die as well.
Yes.
And also, out there with the general public now, when history was a big thing, we've got a whole new generation of people who haven't got time to even belong to a community group anymore, a society, and they see things differently. We've got technology now where you can access so much already, so why be involved in a group? They have all drawn away from when we first formed a society 30 years ago.
I'm surprised at that sort of comment, really, because but with the increase in technology, the information that I get from Twitter or Facebook, I'm very interested in anything to do with horticulture.
Yeah.
So maybe we just need a bit of training in how best to access that.
I think so. Or maybe, as I said before, in some, you know, make it Facebook and all those things as the major way we expose. So it's a whole new level of technology, and with people, younger people are adept at that and using that as the way of exciting people once again. Because in those days, it was basically the reading journals.
Yes.
And the colour, and the journal was only in black and white. There was no colour.
Yeah.
So you had to be pretty well enthused to join it.
I guess we're coming up to the end of what's been a really interesting discussion. Mm-hmm. Your own garden, to me, seems like a paradise. How do you feel about, you know, you've got your own space and you go looking at others, constantly feeding your interest, I imagine.
Well, I'm a collector and, a plants person. And most of my friends are people interested in a whole variety of plants and then how they utilise them. and employ them in their garden scheme as such. And so we like to talk plants. So I enjoy a garden that's got lots of interest in it itself, a whole range of plants. And even as a child, when we used to go somewhere, I'd get bored of, you know, what was happening, and I'd walk around the people and always find if there was a little greenhouse, I would go in there observing the plants as such. I'd always be excited by that. So with gardens, the same. So when I go to a garden that's based on minimalist layouts and it's just multiples of that, I'm very bored straight away. I like to discover, and I still like to see as many plants as possible. So when it comes to possibly what now people want as a garden, but what they want from a garden is very different to what people want from a garden. They want a garden as an outdoor living space in many aspects, or something to add value to their property, something that is low maintenance, something that can be kept neat and tidy. And that has generated a whole new different style of gardening today. Use of plants, reduced number of plants, species, all of that has produced a modern look with the many times meaningless features in a garden just because it's fashionable or it's been seen on a house and garden lifestyle program. So that technology has now really steered what people see. When my parents shifted in to a garden suburb in the 1950s, essentially, they wanted what everyone wanted, some nice colourful flowering roses, grass the kids could play on. It was a quarter acre block. The back section for if you wanted productive vegetables. You look at today, what people want out of a garden, it's just so different.
So in terms of education for people, say, in Perth, are there horticultural courses available for those who are interested?
There's the at the TAFE level to do a 3-year course to get a certificate. I think they do run short courses for people who just want to learn how to propagate, people who want to in that way. I think it still pulls the numbers. There used to be a wave of people who capitalised on the cottage garden, which is now past, and there were a lot of people that was more of a social fun thing without not having to really extend yourself as much that way. But TAFE, and there's private providers now that also provide little short courses as well. If you go looking for it, there's probably still things that you want to do.
See, I think we could be attracting those private thing into the concept of history and, you know, the expansion of their knowledge of the place, the locality.
Well, I've mentioned this to the National Trust, the last two CEOs, and it's never gone anywhere, that a collaboration between the Garden History Society, a TAFE college and the National Trust, where collectively they do a course for people who are interested in the heritage side of horticulture and gardening, where you learn how to read a landscape plan, how to prune a mature tree or a shrub, how to propagate old-fashioned plants. How do you identify a plant? How do you get information using Trove on aspects of old gardens? That would be something that a short course within a couple of weeks that you'd end up with a little certificate that is garden studies that are heritage based.
Mm.
It's never happened. National Trust has always said, oh, you must talk to the board about this. That sounds wonderful. TAFE says, okay, well, we'll get one of our regulars to do that course who doesn't have an interest in heritage. They might be good at horticulture. And it's only us, or me, keep trying to push this thing that this could be unique for the whole of Australia. No one does a course like that. And your volunteers and group of people come out saying, oh, look, I've done a course that with heritage values, you know, or even the Heritage Council to be a partner in it as well. And from the educational point of view, I just think that's what we need. That is what is lacking, that capitalises on that interest area.
It's very much community engagement.
And I even believe too, you know, with the National Trust, they have volunteers that go and help. And a lot of it is show and tell, but, you know, unleash these people and by the end the garden's tidied up. And so I've heard a few tales that, you know, you tackle the biggest rose bush because you want to make a thing. But that rose bush is of a tea rose that needs minimum pruning. And so that link between your volunteers and the end result of actually, in a good old-fashioned talk or lecture, why you don't need to prune it back to a vase shape and three main stems, or why that 100-year-old fruit tree doesn't need to be severely pruned back, because it's probably gone beyond its productive life and you are now really starting to damage, because it's a one-size-fits-all, or this is how we do it.
Mm.
And there's a special case that when you're working, as you do with heritage buildings, you employ people that have, you know, are old or have got those skills. But with gardens, it's like tidy up, make it neat, get rid of the weeds, and just as an adjunct to the old building. So we still haven't got to that point of convincing heritage bodies that is just as important to use people that have got some skills there as well.
I think there's going to be a lot of connection between us and the Heritage Council. Yep. I think in the future they're doing a lot more.
Yeah,
anyway, this is for the future. Okay. Thank you very, very much. Let's draw it to a close.
Okay.
And very good. Very good to speak.
My philosophies. But I've mentioned that, you know, at TAFE, and all they saw was dollar signs. And you said, oh, no, we'll just use John because he's down on his hours. He can get that course up. You know, that's how they saw it as, well, wait a minute, we need to put some money as a little pilot group or do something and pull in these people in that way and tap in the expertise. I mean, I've voluntarily given my time and I just got to the point and think, no, you know, you do this and then you give it to someone is because they need to get extra dollars and it just becomes too big and goes beyond really what it should be achieving. Whether it's... you know, pie in the sky or something else like that. But it'd be nice to sort of have someone that says, you know, I've done a special course. It ran for 3 months. I got a, you know, like that. And in it, we did how to, you know, botanical plant names. Yeah, it can bring a lot of aspects in it that I'm sure some people are volunteers who are weeding every month going to Woodbridge saying, I'd love to know a bit more about that.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's it.
All right. Thank you.
Now.